love. Retribution. Getting even. The solution is a combo of matter and spirit. I can hear the listener say to himself, or maybe exclaim out loud in a high volume voice, "Has this guy gone crazy?" Evaluate for yourself, but please wait till you have all of the information. Like any intelligent person, we cannot jump to conclusions based on partial information, and we certainly have to eliminate bias. From everything that is said in all treatments offered on this website, it is a definitive statement that an absolute connection with the one and only incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love is absolutely necessary. Otherwise, regression is guaranteed. And that refers to every phase of one's life, whether conscious or unconscious, whether individual, collective, or universal, whether latent or kinetic. So what could possibly be meant by stating such what appears to be an oxymoron, that love could be the category and the topic of that could be retribution, getting even, a combo of matter and spirit? Mary Baker Eddy states in no uncertain terms that God is the only cause and creator, which of course is a topic of one of the weekly Bible lessons that she has designated should be studied twice a year. Many other topics refer to the conflict between matter and spirit in topics such as mortals and immortals, reality, and another lesson, unreality, implying that these are absolutely not to be mixed, or Adam and the fallen man, indicating that mortal man is fallen. We're looking at a mist to begin with, so forget that one. How about soul with a capital S and body, indicating that they are opposites? Throughout the 26 Bible lesson topics that are provided, there is always a distinct difference between what we are supposed to be cultivating as the real man and the fake that we are confronted with by mortal mind suggestions constantly. So what could possibly be the meaning of stating that the solution to disposing of retribution or getting even, both of which on their surface appears to be a totally evil thought or character, no matter whether it's in thought, speech, or action, or any two or three of them, and a combo of matter and spirit? Are you kidding me? It has been stated in these treatments that there cannot be an alloy, no mixture. It has to be pure, just as spirit is defined as being flawless, transparent, and therefore reflective. One, if not the most successful police commissioner of all time, is a man who took on the task of cleaning up one of the largest cities in the United States and maintaining the standard that matches the clean result that he was to deliver. As stated in prior treatments, as an example, he had side by side one of the greatest mayors of all time, who was elected because the voters were so fed up with all of the corruption. You name it, and that city was like at the top of the list of that category of corruption and violence and terror, every kind of chaos that one could imagine. What has been mentioned so far is the reasons to be led directly to God as the only possible solution. However, contemplate this. If anyone has ever had a relationship, whether it's family, business, friends, or any other category one may like to consider, the topic of burning the bridge probably has come up, either consciously or unconsciously, where it was deemed that that was the only thing to do. Wise individuals have said, never burn the bridge. One of the commanders in charge of a battle which was going to determine the success or failure of a war did this. As soon as they landed with their ships on the foreign shore, he instructed the men to burn the ships. They demanded an answer, an explanation, a reasonable way to understand why they would destroy their only escape route. His response was, if you have no escape, then you will win, because your only alternative has been eradicated and you have no choice. Therefore, your spirit in fighting, your energy, your effort is going to be to win at any cost. Now, we have to translate that into the spiritual realm. And if we've studied history, real history, not what is in a politically correct writing or account of such a thing, we will have learned that every single chaos in all history has been brought about by man-made methods. It doesn't matter whether it's an earthquake, a storm, a fire, or any other category you can dig up. Any kind of catastrophe whatsoever, any disruption, any discord, every single one is man-made. Why do you think insurance companies want to escape payment by their little statement in fine print that no one reads that says, exclusive of acts of God? So they just blame it on God. They say, well, that's an act of God, so we're not responsible for payment or reimbursement to you of any damages. Very deceptive. They call death insurance life insurance. They call collection of data health insurance or genocide. They call health insurance or a cure for an ailment. Very clever. They manufacture the ailment. Then they give you a solution, everything with one motive in mind, and none of it is wholesome. And the ones that are responsible for doing this don't touch what they consider to be the solution. No, this is for everyone else, not me. I'm above it. I'm immune. I'm exempted. So what could possibly be meant by saying that a combination of matter and spirit could be a solution to getting even or dissolving the desire for retribution? The police commissioner that was mentioned wrote a book. The title of the book, or at least the theme, was on accountability, stating that if there is no accountability, it does not get done. I have no idea if he knows anything about Mary Baker Eddy's works, or whether he's cracked open the Bible and been able to successfully filter through much of the garbage that is in there to really get down to the element of truth, which is also in there, and let that be his guide. But he certainly was a practicing biblical student and a practicing Christian Scientist. He knew about divine metaphysics, whether he was conscious of it or not, because that was his guide. He called it accountability, and really what it was accountability to principle, divine principle, a principle that is non-personal and always works, always in operation, always successful, dissolving imbalance, dissolving discord, and cultivating harmony. Mary Baker Eddy states that love is plan and design. It's one of the primary functions of love. That means that whether or not you are thinking about mind or spirit or soul or principle or life or truth or love itself, plan and design is intermingled with it, woven through it, embedded in it, reflected by it. And that plan and design is cultivating the qualities of God. You cannot be successful in reflecting the one and only incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, or any of the other primary seven qualities of God, unless you are permeated with the lubricant or the oil of spiritual inspiration, the thing that dissolves all chaos, all disagreement, all discord, all dis-ease. And also, you cannot be successful unless you have well in thought the qualities of structure and system. Those are qualities of divine principle. So if you think about the plan and design and structure and system working together with all of the qualities of God, in fact, everything in one's existence, they're out there operating. And all we have to do is get rid of the mist, the fog, the dark glasses that may be preventing us from seeing it clearly. And then, voila, we have a whole new dimension. What did the police commissioner do to bring about a total conversion of one of the most corrupt places in the world to one of the most heavenly? What did this accountability mean? How can we utilize that concept in our individual lives and promote it in collective and universal practice? Mary Baker Eddy states that we are constantly inundated with mortal mind suggestions. She says everywhere we face, it's there, which means that it basically is posing as infinitude. And that's easy to see if one really monitors what confrontation one has as they progress in their study and efforts to become more spiritual. Mary Baker Eddy states that the more advanced one is, the more aggressive is the belief of the opposite. It camouflages itself so that it's almost impossible to detect. So one has to constantly be comparing everything that is in front of them with a standard in order to do their best to filter out and have spiritual perception, spiritual hearing, which is understanding, spiritual identity, which is soul, living a spiritual life, which means practicing the qualities of God in everything we TSA, think, say, and do. A spiritual principle, which means that our standard of structure and system to operate that structure or operate within the structure is purely from the substance of spirit, and our life must be living it. Principle is like comparing having the structure to work with, so we have the standard, and living life is living in that standard. Truth is consciousness and motive. It's like having a yardstick and making sure that we're on the right path. And love, of course, is a combination of all of them mentioned, which means nurturing as a mother would. Nurturing all of the spiritual qualities in all TSA, thought, speech, and action. So that's what we must do as an individual in our filtering. And we're not comparing ourselves to anyone else, like a foot race. Forget about what the other guy is doing. You are not racing another individual. Or it could be a car race, be any kind of a race. It could be a test, academic test, a chemical analysis, building a building as an architect and contractor. It could be anything. The point is, we forget about the other guy. Take out personality. Take out competition. Take out opposition. We have only one thing to do, and that is measure what we're doing with perfection. Are we striving for perfection? Roger Bannister, the fellow that broke the 4-minute mile, the first one to be able to run a mile in less than 4 minutes. Forever, humanity could never run a mile in less than 4 minutes. They couldn't break the barrier. Well, he had a different attitude. He didn't have an attitude about beating someone else. He had an attitude about perfection. How was he going to run with perfection in every phase, every element of what he was doing? So, what does this all have to do with a combination of matter and spirit? It has been said in other treatments to fake it until you make it. In other words, even though we may not understand even an inkling of what we read in Science and Health the first time we read it, or maybe the 20th time we read it, we feel like throwing the book against the wall, like someone that we are aware of that did that with one of the most advanced books written on Christian Science, or let's say an analysis of Mary Baker Eddy's works. It was thrown against the wall more than once because they were trying to understand it and they just couldn't understand it. Well, we don't want to be throwing the book against the wall because all that is doing is being on the same level as the problem. Like Einstein says, you cannot solve a problem if you're viewing it from the same level as where the problem was recognized. You have to elevate your thought to a higher dimension. You have to broaden the picture. Like the professor that when the students came into the room, there was a white sheet hanging across the wall, you know, from wall to wall, or at least the viewing area. And there's a little black dot in the middle. And he didn't say a thing. He just wanted them to look at it. And after they looked for a while, he said, "What do you see?" And the best they could come up with was either nothing, you know, a plain white sheet, or those who started noticing that there was a black dot in the middle, they would say, "Oh, a black dot. That's it. That's what we see, a black dot." And he said, "Focus on the white sheet. That is the big picture. It's white representing purity, and it is the big picture. Then you can identify the little speck to get rid of, which is a myopic view." So what are we looking at? Are we looking at the big picture? Well, the police commissioner looked at the big picture, and he said, "This is chaos now, and what do I do to turn it into harmony? What do I do to convert corruption into an atmosphere of purity, where the crime rate, the violence, every phase of immorality is like the lowest throughout humanity? What do I do? Where do I begin?" Well, he had to begin with a structure. He had to begin with accountability. If we're going to get rid of retribution and the idea of getting even, if we're going to try to solve that disease of mental thinking, maybe we need to have some kind of a physical record of accountability for what appears to be our controlling atmosphere, which is mortal mind. If you write it down and you have to record it and you have to look at it, you cannot help but realize something about what it is telling you. That's what is meant by a combination of matter and spirit. Use material methods to force you to look at a spiritual result. Fake it till you make it. Some are blessed with an absolute photographic memory that they can recall anytime. Most, well, probably everyone has it, but most people don't know how to unlock that to really see through the mist so that they, if they glance at a page, that they don't remember all the details on the page. For example, a telephone book, remembering the names and phone numbers of everyone on the page. Apparently, everyone has that ability, but only a few have been able to experience it. Mary Baker Eddy designated that we should be reading, and of course, I'm sure she meant to thoroughly understand or continue to strive to understand, a little thought that is called the daily prayer. She has in the manual a section on discipline, and in there is a rule for motives and acts. Think about that. Motives and acts. It's not just how we act, it's what our motive is. She has the weekly Bible lesson. These are all structures with a system. And the Bible lesson has supposed to have six sections. And that's designed to focus on one section a day. Not six, one. And if it's done in the spiritual animus in which she set up, then the Monday is going to be, or the first section is going to be focused on what you should do on Monday. Don't peek at section two. Forget section three or four or five or six if it's Monday. You're supposed to be focusing on Monday's lesson. If everybody in the world that has access to the Bible lesson and understands the value of Mary Baker Eddy's system and structure that she set up, and the plan and design, then they will follow what she says and the purpose of it. If one understands the value of accountability, and let's say they make up a spreadsheet, that's merely a matrix that has horizontal and vertical dimensions, and they're usually considered a cell. So in other words, if the vertical rows are called 1, 2, 3, and so forth, and the horizontal columns are called ABC, then cell A1 has a definite value. So for example, we could list in column A, well, we might want to have a number column, But let's say column B, we would list all of the things that we think of that are affecting whatever the problem seems to be, whatever we want to focus on. You know, just list them down, one per row. And then across in the numbered, down, that would be the numbered rows, and then the lettered columns, we could list the progress. For example, we could list in column B the item, and in column C we could indicate the status. For example, if we were thinking about retribution, what did we do about it today? That'd be the next column over. What do we do about today? In other words, we're forced by a so-called material system or something that is going to force mortal mind to look at it. We're utilizing that to establish a divine system and structure. We have to fake it till we make it. Making it is being successful in getting rid of the belief of retribution, or getting even, or burning the bridge and saying, well, I never need that person again, so I'm just going to burn the bridge. I'm disgusted with the way they talk to me or the way they act or whatever. Doesn't matter what the reason is. The point is that it's being personalized. It's pointing to a person and forgetting about the individual being a brother or sister. We're really like the redwood sequoia trees, where under the surface, the roots all touch each other and bond in one grand network. It doesn't matter how bad one tree is, the rest of the trees don't say, forget it, we're going to cut you down and get rid of you. We're going to cut your roots off of ours, and they're not going to be bonded anymore. Well, that weakens the ones that are no longer bonded. But if they all work together in unity, they save the tree that is weak, and it becomes strong. That's what we need to do. Instead of retribution, we need to offer help. We need to be grateful for an opportunity to look at the white sheet instead of the little black dot. Forget the tunnel vision. Don't be like a horse that has blinders on going down the street because they don't, or out there in the woods or countryside or whatever, or a horse race, where they don't want it to see the other horses. We want to see everything. And we want to see everything pure and perfect, as a reflection of the one infinite source, God, the only cause and creator. That's what we want to see. We don't look at matter or mortal mind as being the controller, but like one of the individuals stated in an excellent article, we use our body like an office boy. Well, in those days when he wrote the article, the secretaries were men, like in Mary Baker Eddy's day. You know, she had male secretaries. So, let's let our body be our servant. And what is our body? Our body is everything that gets any TSA from us. Any thought, speech, or action. It's our body. I don't care whether it's a friend or an acquaintance that we just shook hands with and somebody introduced us. Maybe at a meeting of some kind where we don't anticipate any future connection, they're part of our body. We had a thought, speech, or action with them, at one moment. It could be anyone, anything, any event, any relationship, or business, family, friends, an event. Anything and everything that gets any TSA from us is our body. We are supposed to pray ceaselessly. Mary Baker Eddy states that the difference between success and failure is often determined by how we use our moments. Are we going to use our moments with a spiritual animus? Are we going to have the atmosphere of love always in our forefront? The Bible says if we want to remember something, we tack a note on our door. We put it on our forehead. Either we're looking either we're looking in a mirror, or we've got it reversed so that it's so that the text is facing our eyes, hanging down and blocking part of our vision so we cannot forget it. Well, a spreadsheet or a matrix or a list, a shopping list. They're all reminders. They are reminders to mortal mind that we are supposed to be doing something with our enslavement of our body. In other words, our servant. Our body is our servant. We are going to remind that body to get the things on the list. And, of course, the best way to do a shopping list is when you think of it, write it down. Not wait till you're ready to go shopping. You might put a cap on it, finalize the list. Well, think of the shopping list as being our shopping list of life. Some have found it helpful to keep whatever they record their information on next to their bed, in their bathroom. They come out of the shower, they might think of a thought while they're taking a shower. Riding a bicycle or driving a car, whatever. Have some means to be able to record any thought that comes to you extemporaneously, ad hoc. Often, the best thoughts come to us when we're thinking about something unrelated to what the thought is that occurs to us. We want to capture it. Now, thinking about how mortal mind can help us. Remember that Mary Baker Eddy stated that it was the humanity of Jesus, the magnitude of the humanity of Jesus, that enabled his divinity. So he lived love on a human scale, which enabled him to jump over the bridge to be more spiritual. He didn't ignore people that were in need. He was like the story of the Samaritan. The man did not walk on the other side of the street to avoid the individual in need, but he went to him, picked him up. I believe it said he carried him, or he took him to a housing facility, paid the individual to take care of him, and said he would come back and see if he needed any more money. And he was coming back to care for him, make sure that everything was okay. Think of our own consciousness as being the one that is in need. Are we nurturing it? Are we digging down into the depths of it and digging out the reasons why we want to have retribution or to get even? Well, one thought that came to me, which encouraged me to record this just moments before I began recording it, was to create a need to have a relationship For example, just don't think of someone as a functionary, and when they have done what they were supposed to do, whether you hired them or they were returning a favor or whatever it was, create a relationship where you are required to treat them in a beautiful, loving way, because there's a benefit to both of you. Now, the benefit to yourself is that you're going to be complying with the number one commandment and number two commandment of Christ Jesus. When they ask him, what is the greatest commandment of all? And he said, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Remember, we've got that suggestion of mortal mind that is constantly bombarding us with dis-ease. So we want to combat that, and we want to fake it till we make it by creating an atmosphere where we need each other, where it is selfish to be loving someone because we need them. It is forcing mortal mind to reach out to the divine. And eventually we will get rid of the ego or the selfishness, because we'll see there's a benefit in harmony. We will not want to burn the bridge, because we never know when we can be of service to that individual. And of course, that's the idea. Not to know when we no longer need them, but we want to always be in a position where they will be receptive to communicate with us, so that we might be able to offer them something that occurs to us that will be a benefit to them. And believe me, the greatest feeling anyone can have is helping others. Clara Barton tirelessly helped others. She was the founder of the American Red Cross. Back in the day when the American Red Cross was pure. I don't know so much about today, but at one time, they were in business to help others, and she gave tirelessly of herself to help others. She is listed under our list of authors on the mbeinstitute.org website, and it quotes her from an interview she had with a magazine on what she thought of Christian Science and Mary Baker Eddy and the textbook. Also, Einstein, Dr. Albert Einstein, is one of our listed authors, and it quotes many statements that he made, an analysis by a professor from one of the universities that did research on it, and we're about to post something else. And this one is from a Christian Scientist who did research on various quotations that Albert Einstein had stated about the textbook, Mary Baker Eddy, and Christian Science. Forget about burning a bridge. That's only an act of ego. I'm too important to mess with that. I'm just going to cut it off. I'm going to take my scissors and cut that right out of consciousness so that I never think about that person again. Boy, is it a relief to get rid of them. Well, one better look in the mirror. Because once the unity is broken, just like one of the redwood sequoia trees, once you're cut out of the system, you are by yourself. Because the system includes all existence. That's where a so-called devil or evil is. It's all by itself. We only give it unity with us if we say, oh, come on in, sure, I'll do this and that, doesn't matter who it hurts, even if it hurts myself. But that's what retribution is. Often it hurts oneself. In fact, it's designed, because you can't hurt someone else without hurting yourself. Absolutely can't do it. Just like you can't help or negate helping yourself if you're helping someone else. Unless you're helping someone else because you're going to get something out of it, then you hurt yourself because you're lowering your standard. The police commissioner obviously saw the value to the city and all of its occupants of the great benefit that there would be if only he could figure out a way to do it. And I'm convinced he was divinely led to do what he did, because he turned corruption into purity. A city of H-E-L-L into a pleasant residence. Business prospered. Buildings, new buildings, rejuvenated buildings. Everything was good. Everything benefited. In fact, it benefited so much that he was the target to be taken down. That's what happens. That is what good is all about. When you're over the target, you are going to be targeted. You are the target. Well, what do we want to do? Do we want to just passively comply with all of the barrage of mortal mind suggestions and just join in with a so-called belief of devil? Or are we going to fight it? Well, really not fight it, really rise above it. That's the best way to fight it. We don't get in the battle at the level of mortal mind, but we're focusing on the white sheet. We're not letting that little speck of black try to take us down. We're going to focus on the white sheet. Frederick L. Rawson, one of the greatest practitioners of all time, he said, our motive should be to make other people happy. That's it. He excelled in every single thing he did. Check him out. His picture is on every page up there in the header. Just click on it and it will take you to his index page. Read his bio. I think it's something like 18 pages long. Everything he did, he excelled. He was hired by a reputable newspaper to research Christian Science. They said, we have stories about there being healing in this thing called Christian Science. We know you are a research man. He was an expert in electricity. People came to him from all over the world to solve electrical problems with their companies. He was the best consultant you could have because he stood on principle and he loved the Bible. So they knew that he loved the Bible and they knew he stood on principle. And so they said, would you research this religion? He'd never heard of it. It was a foreign country. So he researched it with great interest because he had a love of the Bible and he was very meticulous in his research efforts and his profession of being an electrical consultant. Well, he ended up being one of the greatest practitioners of all time. There's no record of him ever meeting Mary Baker Eddy, but he lived in her day. So he adopted Christ Jesus' method, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. He says the greatest thing you can do is love your neighbor. Make your neighbor happy. Now, obviously, he didn't mean to do immoral things to try to please a corrupt mortal mind. I think he was talking in terms of a human standpoint. If your neighbor has a need, see how you can help him. He discovered how to do retroactive healing, where the healing process would begin prior to him knowing anything about there being a problem. He took a large group of men. This was apparently during World War I, out into the battlefield. He had already learned about Christian Science. He wrote out something that he gave to all of them. And they were supposed to be reading it and thinking about it while they were out in the battlefield. He came back, not a single one in his group was injured. I wouldn't be surprised if they never shot a gun, because it'd be difficult to be reading about Christian Science and trying to kill the opposition. But there was no statement of that. He was gazing out a window with another individual that was cultivating his spirituality, his own spirituality. The other individual I'm referring to wrote a number of books, became very popular for his spiritual views. He's listed as one of our authors. Anyway, they both were looking out this window, and this was back in the early days, you know, probably somewhere around 1910 or something like that, 1915 or so. And there was a man that was pulling a cart that was full of rocks, or he was driving a cart that was drawn by an animal. I don't know whether it was an oxen or what, but anyway, very heavy load. And he sensed there was something wrong with the tailgate, the driver did, so he went back to inspect it, and while he did, something alarmed the animal, and he raised up, dumped the whole load of rocks, totally covered this man up. Mr. Rawson saw this event take place. He said just a few words. There is nothing but God. Obviously, he said that with great conviction and understanding, because the man came blasting out of from underneath the rocks like a rocket. Totally unharmed, not a scratch. Instantaneous healing. Mr. Rawson wrote a book. By the way, anyone that has their picture up in the header, and he's one of 10 images up there, you can just click on their image and it'll take you right to their index page. Anyway, he wrote a book, well, he wrote several books, many books, but one of them is Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And he researched 1,315 different ailments. I mean, everything you can imagine. It's like an encyclopedia of how to get well. Instead of in Monopoly, how to go to jail, it's a how to get, you know, to get out of jail free card. So anyway, they're short paragraphs, otherwise the book would be 20,000 pages long, but they're short paragraphs, and we have everything indexed on our website. All you do is go to the 1,315 treatments from the menu under treatments, And there's an A to Z index. Anything you can think of that could be an ailment, he shows you what the human belief is in a very short, few words, and what the counterfact is, the spiritual counterfact that you use as your tools to work on to solve the problem. Murray Baker Eddy states that we have to find out what the belief is, and we have to know the counterfact to that belief in order to heal any problem. And he gives it to us in an encyclopedia. One of the most wonderful tools you can have. And then, of course, you can expand the few words that he says that is the key treatment thought, and you can expand that as much as you want. And we've done that in some of our treatments. We take something that is can be stated in a couple of words as a problem and show you how you can utilize the seven synonymous terms for God to heal it. We definitely have to bridge the gap between matter and spirit because they're opposites. But we have to use what we have the facility to use, which is our body, which is all thought, speech, and action, to remind us in whatever system works for us. Now, I'm not sure I explained about the developing the need. For example, I know a situation where a fellow had a relationship with a real estate broker. And the real estate broker located some properties the individual was interested in. And they made a relationship where the individual would get 10% of the value of any sale that was made when it was time to turn the property over for a profit. Or, should things go wrong, limit the loss. So there was an ongoing relationship, and there was a reason for them to always be in touch as opposed to just cutting the cord and burning the bridge. Say, well, okay, he did that one deal, that's it. That is a reason for them to get along. They want to be harmonious because they both have a benefit. And of course, the spiritual view is that you're giving a benefit to the other person. That should be your real motive. And you automatically will receive a benefit. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Always think of helping the other person. Don't think about what benefit you may get. It's like a salesman, a professional salesman that trains, and they make their presentations, and they do their follow-ups and everything. It's like they're putting all this in a pipe. And sooner or later, on the other end of the pipe is going to fall out a sale. If they keep doing what they're doing and do enough of it and do it consistently, and they're offering a quality product and so forth, and they're following all the various steps you should do, on the other end, you're going to get a sale. That's what we've got to do. We got to keep putting all of these good actions in consciousness, in TSA, and the benefit will roll, but we don't need to worry about the benefit because it's automatic. We need to benefit. We need to be concerned about how much are we putting into consciousness that we want to stick there. The police commissioner knew that if he hired a man that was his assistant, or maybe 10 of them, however he divided up his hierarchy, I don't know. But if he hired a team that he could teach about this accountability thing where everybody was accountable, and he stuck to it, in other words, he enforced the discipline, and then they did the same thing, each one of those people in his team did the same thing with those that they would have in their team, and they would finally filter down to the very last cop that was walking the beat on the street. Okay? Everybody was accountable. One of the fellows that was the chief or key manager for one of the wealthiest guys in the U.S., who was in an industry that was experiencing rapid growth because of his ingenuity and so forth, his key person went into the factory. This happened to be where they were producing a product. Went into the factory one morning, or I don't know, maybe in the middle of the night, and he took a piece of chalk and wrote a huge letter, a huge number on the floor. And the next team, the next shift that came in, I believe the book I read said it was a 24-hour operation. Anyway, there was a night shift and there was a day shift. And in between the shift changes, he took a piece of chalk and wrote a big number on the floor. And the guys came into the next shift and they wondered, what in the world does that mean? And they finally realized that that was how many tons of the product that they were producing was produced. So they intuitively figured that out and said, we're going to beat it. And that's exactly what the manager wanted them to do. And that's exactly what they did. So at the end of the shift, the people that were in the shift wrote their own number down of how many they had done. So the idea came to the manager to do this to instill a motive of competition. Really, the spiritual nature of this means that I want to do better. But in this particular case, it was the opposition. So they instilled in themselves the encouragement to do better than had been done before. That's what we want to do in feeding our consciousness. We want to keep raising the standard. And one way to do it is by having accountability in a visual way. I mean, you can use a spreadsheet, you can use a checklist, you can use and whatever works for you is what you need to do. But it needs to be consistent. It needs to be at a measured time so that you're comparing apples with apples. And you have to have a motive that is pure. It needs to benefit everyone. It may start out as being selfish, but eventually it will benefit everyone. In this particular case, it would benefit the whole town because they were going to earn more money. They didn't know it. They didn't think about that, but they earned more money because they were producing more. And so there was more money spent in the town. The town spruced up. Shops would move into the town because there was growth going on. So everybody benefited. They didn't start out that way, but it automatically happens that when you think of something besides yourself, which eventually what happened, then it benefits everyone concerned. So yes, we can mix matter and spirit by using matter or mortal mind or whatever we want to call it. It could be a reminder, a physical reminder of accountability, and utilize that for a discipline to get us closer to the spirit. Mary Baker Eddy says, she repeats the Bible. Precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. She says, don't try to get there in one step. It's like the turtle and the hare. The rabbit races, gets tired, and stops to rest. While he's asleep, the turtle walks right on by and gets to the finish line first. We want to be steady. We want to be monitoring our results. Mary Baker Eddy says it's important to record even and a small advancement in your progress. Don't wait till you have this fantastic healing. But if you see progress, record it. She said one of the biggest mistakes that she made was she did not record healings that she had in the early days of her experience. We need to keep a record of our progress in every phase of our life. Because everything that is progress is a healing. It is showing the nothingness of the power of opposition, which is the workings of mortal mind. One last thought. One of the most successful businessmen of all time, and he's very active right now in more ways than one can imagine, working behind the scenes to help all mankind. He built a business worldwide, properties and businesses in many countries. Each one is considered the best there is, as voted by those who use the services offered by the company, not by some fake rating service, who are often paid under the table. He's written many books, and one of them talks about the art of making a transaction come about. And he says that if once he would ever think about the profit that could be made from the deal, he's sure it would be a failure. He said the focus has to be on coordinating the benefit to all parties involved so that everyone is happy. That kind of a deal could be made with a handshake, and everyone would want to comply because everyone is getting what they feel they need and a fair deal. It boils down to love, which is really nurturing all the qualities of God. One more little thing that I haven't mentioned, which is very important to understand, and that's the operators of the system of divine metaphysics that Mary Baker Eddy delivered to the world. They are summarized in Revelation as the city four square. Just like mathematics has the digits of 0 to 9, and the operators of add, subtract, multiply, and divide as the basic elements of the operations of mathematics, the system of divine metaphysics in the city four square are defined as the Word, the Christ, the Christianity, and science. And very briefly, the Word means gathering the facts. And really, they are only one set of facts, and those are the facts about God. The seven synonymous terms. The incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And the first four words in that definition of God, which is given in Science and Health on page 465 in the chapter Recapitulation, chapter 14, which is a summary of chapters 1 through 13, those first four words were incorporeal. That means the Word. Means the Word, the facts, are bodiless. They're spiritual qualities. And we can't even approach what they mean until we're ready to realize that matter is not the solution. The second one is divine. And divine is the translation. translation is the Christ. That means, just like the businessman that was quoted a moment ago, he looked on how everybody could be made happy. So you have to translate the facts into something that is going to please everyone, not compromising the facts, but utilizing them to look for where is there harmony, where everything fits together. If there isn't, then you walk away from it. And the third is supreme, and that represents the Christianity, which is the demonstration. It's living the facts, utilizing the translation to bring about the healing or the demonstration of completion. And then the fourth is science, which means that you have gained heaven on earth. You have success. Therefore, harmony is automatic. Mr. Rawson states it in a few words. There is nothing but God. Amen.